Disse podcastepisodene ble tatt opp på senhøsten 2021, altså I en tid hvor koronaviruset fortsatt forhindret slike produksjoner. Derfor har vi gjort intervjuer med gjestene over nettet, og lydkvaliteten på disse intervjuene kan derfor variere.
Hello, I'm Nicholas Carley. Today, it's all about the bard. Shakespeare is one of the most influential writers of all time. Everybody has heard about at least one of his plays, if it's Hamlet, Romeo and Juliet, or Othello. I could go on, and I will go on with the help of my guest, Brita Strand-Rangnes, an associate professor at the University of Stavanger, as well as being a literary critic. She knows quite a lot about William. I have a big question for you, and would love a small answer. Who was William Shakespeare? I know it's a big one, but what is the modern historical consensus on William Shakespeare as we stand today?
Well, William Shakespeare was, I mean, we all know that he was perhaps the most famous writer in the world, or at least the one that most people have heard about. He was a not highly educated, but fairly well-educated man from a small English town who moved to London towards the end of the 16th century, towards the end of the 1500s, and he joined the very fast-growing industry of theatre in London at the time. And he wrote some of the most famous texts, or, well, we can come back to that, whether they're texts in the way we understand them, but some of the most famous plays and literary works in history, at least in Western literary history.
Because he is, strictly speaking, a playwright, more than an author. Am I correct in assuming this?
Definitely, even though, I mean, he did produce other texts than plays. He also produced quite a lot of poetry, but he is most famous for writing plays or producing plays. Because the thing about a play is, of course, that it is a text that isn't primarily written to be read. It's written to be performed. Exactly, so in many ways, it would be, I mean, the original way of experiencing one of Shakespeare's plays would, of course, be to watch it or to hear it, as would be the case in Shakespeare's days. And in some ways, it's as unnatural to read Shakespeare as it is, or to ask, have you read Shakespeare, as it is to ask someone if you've read Sex and the City. Or Big Bang Theory, because they are all texts that are not primarily written to be read, but written to be experienced as performance.
So he was kind of a movie maker of his time, in a way.
You could say that. I mean, he's part of a very, very large new industry that is producing entertainment for a lot of people. And he is producing, in a sense, mass entertainment. He's producing plays to be performed for a huge crowd consisting of audience members from all walks of life, and also both men and women, which is quite important for the kind of text that he produces. So he is, in a sense, producing for what would be the equivalent of, well, the movies or even television.
Was he famous in his time, or is that something that happened afterwards?
No, he was very famous in his time. I mean, he
was a celebrity then.
I don't know if you could say. He was very famous. Yeah. He was. And he was, I mean, this is, we're used to thinking of authors, right, as this lonely genius almost, someone who is cooped up writing as much for themselves as for an audience. Right. I mean, this is something that we're used to thinking, this kind of myth of the author. But of course, Shakespeare is part of, as I said, a huge industry. He is writing for money. He's a professional writer. So he's writing for money. So he needs people to come see his plays, or he's not going to make money. So he is an entertainer, and he is part of a very, very large group of writers and theater entrepreneurs and actors, and yes, as I said, a large industry writing, producing, performing at this time. But he is definitely one of the most famous and the most recognized in his time, definitely.
I think we could say that he nailed it pretty much then.
I think he did, yes, yeah. He did.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the time. What is going on in England and London at this time? You said that the theatre is like a new craze, but what are the politics and the social issues of the time in his life?
Well, Shakespeare was born in 1564 and he died in 1616. So he is sort of smack in the middle of what has very often been referred to as the Renaissance in England. And now we also much more frequently use the term early modern, because this is when we're starting to see we recognize society in some ways. But Shakespeare is he is part of a society that is very much changing, I think we can say.
Right.
Yeah. If we think about the 16th century, the 1500s in England and in Europe and the world, so much is going on. If we think about the world, first of all, we have in 1492, as we all know, we have the start of the so-called discoveries of the New World, right? So all of a sudden the world is expanding. We have brand new trade routes. We have brand new goods and knowledge coming into the world. We have the explorations, right, that have a lot of impact in the 16th century. In the middle of the 1400s, we have the invention of the printing press, all of a sudden making printed material and written material much more available to so many more people than previously. Mm. And we have in England at the time, we have a lot of also religious controversy, which is of course not something that is just limited to England, because the early 1500s or the first half of the 1500s is also of course the time of the Reformation. So Shakespeare is living in a time of huge expansion globally, and in Europe. He's living in a time when we have a lot of religious and cultural conflict, where we have the father of Elizabeth I, who is the queen, the monarch, when the first part of Shakespeare's life, Henry VIII, he broke with the Catholic Church in order to marry his mistress. Mm. We still have a lot of religious conflict in England going on between Protestants and Catholics, and of course new Puritan movements. And Shakespeare is navigating this both cultural, political, religious landscape as a writer and of course as a businessman. We see a lot of that in his plays, and that's a very interesting, it's a very interesting backdrop for his plays.
It's fascinating because, like you said, he's writing to make money. So he's obviously working as a crowd pleaser, if we could say that in some sense. Is he also, can we also hear a personal voice and personal opinion in his work that he's sneaking in somehow?
Well, it's really difficult to find a personal voice in dramas, in the sense that what we get in the dramas would always be, of course, character speaking. Right. So it's always difficult to say who Shakespeare would be or who the author would be, if that's relevant at all. It would perhaps be much easier to recognize a personal voice in his poetry, especially sonnets, than in his dramas. But of course, one of the things that is very interesting one of the things that Shakespeare is so recognized for is, of course, his ability to mirror or to represent so much of human experience and so much of society and so much of humanity, in a way, things that we still recognize. But what his voice in the dramas would be is, of course, really difficult to know.
Right. But people recognize the emotions he's describing then in his characters.
Yes, and perhaps we could, this is perhaps also linked to the fact that he is writing for money, and he's writing for such a diverse crowd as he's writing for. Because, of course, I guess that a very well-known fact is, of course, that all actors in Shakespeare's time would be male because women were not allowed on stage as actors. So that might then lead us to think that, yeah, Shakespeare is writing sort of a very masculine form of drama. But so many of his audience members were women, and they were actually really important in terms of his financial stability. So, of course, Shakespeare, if Shakespeare hadn't written really interesting and really good female characters that women wanted to see and recognized, of course, he wouldn't make money. So he is writing very, very interesting characters for all sorts of all kinds of people and social classes, and both men and women. And I think that is something that we still recognize, and one of the things that is makes him so interesting and so accessible, or perhaps not instantly accessible, but something that still speaks to us today.
Who are his colleagues at the time? Are there other names, other authors or playwrights from the same time that I would recognize, do you think?
Oh, there are so many wonderful authors from the time. And sometimes you think that they have just been very unlucky to be writing at the same time as Shakespeare, because we don't read them as much. But one of the very important playwright for Shakespeare, and someone who is writing slightly before or at the same time as Shakespeare's very early plays, would be Christopher Marlowe, who is one of the famous playwrights. We have people like Ben Jonson, John Webster. We have more than 300 plays actually surviving from the period. We have a lot of contemporary playwrights producing plays at the time. But a lot of them would be people that we haven't really, most of us wouldn't recognize today.
Right. So it's a very political time. It's an awakening of culture. It's very productive and exciting. Why do you think that Shakespeare emerges as the kind of the goat, if I could use a modern expression, of writing in this time? Why did he win that generation?
He did. I mean, he is really within that very competitive field. He is the greatest, or at least, yeah, I think most people agree that he has produced, he was the top of his class, so to speak, in his period.
And is so it because of his language or the volume of production? What do you think, if you were going to put your finger on something that kind of made him stand out?
Well, I do think that some of it has to do precisely with the fact that he's able to produce so many, that he's able to write for such a diverse crowd, and that he is so good at that, and he's able to produce or capture so much of human emotion and human existence. But in terms of his language, I mean, yes, he is, of course, he's very productive, and he has a very varied vocabulary. But this is something that a lot of people attribute to Shakespeare. They say that he invented so many of the words we have today and so on. And this is perhaps not as correct as we'd like to believe. I think we have, again, this just like we want the author to be this genius, this one person who comes up with everything on his own and just sort of creates out of nothing. The way that we've been trained to think of authors since the Romantic period, more or less, towards the late 1700s and early 1800s. This is quite different. I mean, this is a time of a huge language expansion in England at the time. So Shakespeare is, of course, he's really good. He's making up a lot of new words, but at the same time, so is everyone. And the English language is going through such a huge transformation at the time. So this need to make Shakespeare the sole inventor of all of these new words are perhaps a reflection of this need to make him out to be this extreme exception, this genius in every single field. Whereas, as I said, this is a time of great linguistic expansion in the English language.
Mm. So maybe he gets a little more credit than he should have, but it's the time he's living in which is exploding, not only him as a playwright. Is that what you're trying to say?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, this is a time when there is a change from Latin in learned texts, for instance. In every scientific text would traditionally be in Latin, and now more and more people are starting to get an education and to write in English, meaning that there is a huge need to translate all of the scientific and sort of theoretical vocabulary from Latin to English, meaning that you have so many words coming in from Latin.
Does he do something special? Like you were speaking about that he was appealing to large audiences and very diverse audience, and then the women as well, which was unusual at the time. Is he a working class voice, or is he a posh writer who kind of taps into the working class? Do you think?
No, I mean he is someone who is not he. He is, some of his colleagues actually look down on him because he doesn't have a university education.
Right.
So some of the colleagues find him crude. Some of the other writers find him crude and uneducated and sort of just a show-off or a wannabe. So he definitely has a different background from a lot of his, from several of his colleagues. But at the same time, of course, he is also very well versed in upper class life, and he knows a lot, and he observes, and he is also, of course, part of he becomes a favorite, and he becomes a lot of upper class people as well. So he is someone I think who is very good at observing, and he uses what he sees, what he knows, very, very, very well. But of course, he does have a very different background from some of the other writers at his time. He has a grammar school background, which is, of course, it's still a good education, but it's nowhere near a university education.
Right. So he is dealing with bias at the same time that he's a big hit. How do you think that affects him? Is that something that possibly hurts his feelings, do you think, that his colleagues see him in that way?
I really wouldn't know. I'm not sure that he would pay that much attention to it. At least,
right.
At least it didn't stop him. If anything, it seems
not.
To have
no,
fueled
that's,
his.
That's for sure.
His writing. Yeah.
Yeah, he kept writing.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have any experience with Shakespeare, what do you think would be a good starting point for me if I wanted to get into it? And obviously, we do read him a lot these days, but there are possibly hundreds of movies as well, which are very true to his texts. I know a lot of Hollywood actors, they see it as a status symbol to end their career with some thespian movie or something like that. Where would you recommend that I start?
Well, I really would recommend that you start with whatever you think is fun and enjoyable.
Right.
I would say that, remember that Shakespeare actually wrote for entertainment. And that is quite important. I would also remind people that Shakespeare is difficult. When you don't understand Shakespeare, it's not because you're stupid, it's because the texts are difficult. It's not meant to be difficult necessarily, but of course they are 400 years old.
Right, yeah.
I always tell my students, read everything. I mean, read the summaries, read all the help you find on the internet. And also watch the movies, watch any kind of dramatization you get. But I also think that find a version that you think is enjoyable.
Right.
And again, you have so many, you also have, for instance, you have modern adaptations like 10 Things I Hate About You, that movie that a lot of people know. And that is, of course, Taming of the Shrew. You have She's the Man, which is Twelfth Night. You have a lot of modernized versions that take their plot lines from Shakespeare. And I say, go ahead, watch that, enjoy it. And then read the texts and don't worry too much about all the stuff you don't get. We have this tendency to get hung up on, we think that what we don't understand is what has to be important. Focus on what you do understand instead and go from there.
All right. Thank you so much, Britta. Fascinating. I'm sure we could speak about Shakespeare for hours and hours, but I'm pretty sure we've touched in on the main points.
Produsert av Både og for en del av